The number one news and talk station in all of Westchester County. Number one for news. Number one for talk. News Talk Radio 77. WABC.
WABC.
WABC New York. It's the Sunday edition with Monica. Monica Crowley.
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it into the 3 o'clock hour. I'm Monica Crowley on 77 WABC on this glorious Independence Day. Happy birthday to America. We are 228 years young today. And I'm glad to have you with me. I hope you're out there having a good time. Telephone number here is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-WABC. And on this July 4th, I decided to do something really unique and very special because we do celebrate our independence today. We do celebrate our freedoms. And those freedoms were bought and paid for by men and women of previous generations and the current generation who are willing to risk their lives so that all of us can enjoy the freedoms that we have today. The hot dog eating contest on Coney Island today would not have happened. And I'm not being facetious here. I am saying that we would not have the kinds of freedoms that we can enjoy today, where you can go to Coney Island and watch the hot dog eating contest, if we didn't have brave men and women who are willing to give their lives so that all of us could enjoy being free, so that I could sit behind this microphone today on the 4th of July on Independence Day and talk to all of you and say exactly what I want. Within reason. 1-800-848-WABC. It is so important to remember those who gave their lives. And we do it on Memorial Day. We do it Veterans Day. And yes, we do it on Independence Day. Because that Revolutionary War, the words that I read to you at the top of the show, coming from Thomas Jefferson, the Declaration of Independence, signed on this date in 1776, that put into motion the American Revolution that changed the world. Up against enormous odds, the American people came together and turned back a mighty opponent, the British. And we did it so many times over so many years, and we continue to do it today. And so what I thought I'd do today is bring you one person's story that is particularly meaningful on this Independence Day, on this July 4th. And to share his story, we welcome Conrad Netting IV. What a name! Conrad Netting IV. His website is www.delayedlegacy.com. Welcome, Conrad.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here today.
It's nice to have you here. My pleasure. The way from San Antonio, Texas.
That's a long way.
Home state of the current president,
That's right.
Might add.
Yes.
And you've got a nice accent going, so a little flavor for the New York audience here.
Right.
Well, I decided to invite Conrad Netting to the show after reading his story. And Conrad, you wrote this story for USAA
right.
magazine,
mm-hmm.
which is a magazine for the military and for the families and dependents
right.
of military. And I found it incredibly inspirational and moving.
Thank you.
It's the cover story of the September issue. I don't think the general public can get the USAA magazine,
no,
right?
No, probably not. There are 4 million members, as I hear it, of USAA, and those households did receive the magazine, but the website has some of the articles and some of the pictures on it, so that would be helpful.
Oh, good. So if you can't get your hands on this USAA magazine, you can certainly go to Conrad's website. It's delayedlegacy.com and read the story, and we're going to walk you through it now. I wanted you to reach as wide an audience as possible with this story because it
Thank you.
Amazing. Let's start at the beginning.
Okay.
July 4th, 1994, 10 years ago today.
Yes.
That day changed your life. Tell us what happened.
That day, we were in my backyard. My mother had died a few months before, and it was time to clean out her house and all those belongings that are in it that accumulate over the decades. We found these footlockers in the garage, and we said, well, I'm not going to hang on to these things for another few decades, so let's open them up. They had names of my uncles on them and of my father.
These were World War II era footlockers, right?
II.
Were they dusty and hadn't seen the light of
drab,
day for a while?
The stenciled names on the outside, just like the movies. So we opened them up, and in the backyard on July the 4th, 10 years ago today, we opened them up, found inside some expected things and some things that went straight to the curb. They were just not worth keeping. But the last one we opened, in fact, that we tried to open,
were
had
these,
been sealed.
Let me just stop you sure. there, Conrad. Were the things that you were pulling out of your uncle's footlockers, were they things that you wanted to keep for yourself that yeah. harkened back to that era, like uniforms yes. that they had used in yes. the European theater and so on?
Yes. Yes. My cousins were there, and whose fathers had packed these footlockers when they came home. My father didn't come home from the war. He was killed right after D-Day. So we were opening these and found lots of different things in there, some tools even. I don't know how those got in there. But anyway, the cousins were oohing and aahing over their contents, and we were generally pleased with our adventure that day so far.
Well, you write in the piece that you found dusty uniforms,
yes.
shirts, shoes, shower clogs,
yes.
a Mae West Life yes. Preserver, which I just love the name of that, the
yes.
Mae West Life Preserver,
yes.
monogram sterling silver combs and brush sets, and a smelly navy mattress. Along with a set of tools.
That's right.
So these were important to you, but basically nondescript kind
That's
of
right.
items, right?
Most of those things were pretty much what you would expect. We weren't terribly surprised. The family kept, just having a good time out in the backyard by the pool. We then got to the last one, which was sealed. The others were just, you could just open them up, but this one was sealed very tightly. It took us, 10, 5, 6, 7 minutes. We have this on videotape. I should look at it sometime and count how long it took. But it took a long while to open. We were able to finally pry it open with a crowbar, and inside, sealed up for 50 years amongst hundreds of mothballs, were my father's uniforms, shower set, diary, and most importantly, his flight log.
Did your mother ever talk to you when you were growing up about your father's experience in the war?
Yes, we talked occasionally about it, but over 50 years, it's not something that comes up every night at dinner. We just accepted the fact that I didn't have a father, and that her husband had died when she was 21, and she was pregnant with me. And it just became our life. There wasn't anything unique about it to us. We just went on down the road. But it was not something that came up every day. Though had I asked, and whenever I did ask as a child or even as an adult, we talked it through, yes.
Now, your parents were together for just a short amount of time
yes.
before they decided to get married.
Yes.
And then your father was shipped off to England
right.
and the European theater
yes.
of World War II. I know he was stationed in England. There are some great pictures here,
yes.
which you can see in your website,
yes.
DelayedLegacy.com, of a very handsome Conrad Netting
III, right.
your father,
Thank
in
you.
His uniform, standing in England, ready to ship out into combat. And I know that you write that he died on June 10th, 1944, which was, of course, 4 days after the Normandy
right.
invasion began.
Yes.
What was your father's responsibilities?
He was a P-51 fighter pilot stationed in Debden, England. He had gotten his P-51 about a month before. I was so proud of it. I've read all the letters home to my mother. He was just thrilled to have this plane. He even named it after me. He put my shortened name on the cowl of the engine, and that was Conjohn 4. Roman 4. IV.
And that's a nickname for Conrad John Netting, right?
Right?
And so your mother was pregnant with you when he did
yes,
this.
Yes, he's assuming I was going to be a boy.
He had a lot of confidence that you were going to
sure
be a boy,
was.
Huh?
Yes.
So he puts the name of his unborn child on his combat aircraft,
right.
Where most of the guys put up Betty Grable
yes.
and their names of their girlfriends,
that's
right?
That's right, that's right.
So he had full confidence in
yes.
you at a very early time, Conrad.
Right. Weeks and months before I was born.
We're talking to Conrad Netting IV, whose website is called DelayedLegacy.com, www.DelayedLegacy.com, and we're telling his story and his family's story. All right, so your father dies on June 10th, 1944,
yes. he was strafing,
in the Normandy.
Yes,
in Normandy. Tell us what he was doing.
He was on a mission that day. In fact, he volunteered for the mission that day. He was at that time, the German army, of course, was in a little bit of disarray behind the D-Day beaches. And the fighter pilot's job then was, since the Luftwaffe was not particularly effective at that time, was to take on targets of opportunity. So his targets would be whatever presented themselves. It could have been railroad trains, it could have been fuel trucks, it could have been almost anything. But that day, he happened to see some fuel trucks in a little town named San Michel de Andon, which is just below the D-Day beaches, probably 50 kilometers or so. And he and his squadron were attacking those planes, those trucks on that day.
So they were attacking those German, it was a convoy, essentially, of fuel that the Germans were bringing to the front.
To the beachhead, that's
right. To supply their troops. And your father, through the air, flying above them, went to strafe them and try to take them out.
That's correct.
And what happened?
Well, he did take them out. We have that from both the German side. We were able to research that. We have it in German, in fact. I had it translated. We also have it from the American side. We were able to research his file, and that confirmed it. But we also heard it from people in that area. But most importantly, we heard it from his wingman, who was flying directly behind him. All of those stories came into one conclusion, that he did take out those fuel trucks. But as he was doing so, they call it target fixation. He was fixated on the target. When he pulled up, he was not aware that there were some tall trees off to his right.
The hedgerows.
Well, even higher than the hedgerows. This was almost the leading edge of a forest is what it really was. We've been there and seen them. His plane clipped that tree, and the plane turned over, and he crashed in a fireball and was killed.
Mm. 6 days after the invasion began.
Yes.
He died a hero. Conrad, your father died
Thank
a
you.
Hero. That was June 10th, 1944. And you found, when you opened this footlocker 10 years ago today, you found your father's flight log.
Yes.
Tell us what the entry on that day, what it said.
I'd be happy to. We were opening these, after we opened this footlocker, we were able to dig down a little ways, and in there was his flight log. This is a document that the pilots keep. They record minute by minute what was going on that day. And for some reason, he was able to bring this home. You would think it would be classified information, but the military sent it home with his belongings. So we were very fortunate to see that, and it was the crowning touch of opening this footlocker. After we looked at a few days, in May and so early June of 1944, I had the idea. I said, well, let's turn to June the 10th and let's see what happened on that day. So we turned to that, and this is what we read. Khan, that was his nickname, was going in on a truck, leading the rest of the squadron to it. And while he was firing, he got too close. When he pulled up, his ship was seen to crash and explode. It was his last flight. He flew as a volunteer, and in his eagerness to stop an enemy truck convoy from reaching the beachhead, he gave his life. I lost a very good friend today, and the squadron will miss him as a valuable man. But it will be nothing as compared to the loss to Catherine, my mother, and Khan John the Fourth, unquote.
And that's you. Do you have any idea who wrote that passage?
At that time, we didn't. At that time, it was like a voice from 50 years ago was standing there amongst us on that patio in San Antonio, telling us about the past. We had no idea at that time who it was.
Do you know now?
Yes. Through research, pre-internet style, we were able to track this man down. It was written by my dad's wingman on that day. His name was Patty U, and he was from Detroit. And they had trained together in Texas and in Florida and then shipped together overseas and were roommates in England at Debden. He wrote this because he had direct evidence of it from his position as a wingman flying directly in the slipstream behind my dad that day. So we tracked him down. We found him in Florida. He was retired, and we got to visit with him. This was in 1997, I believe. We got to visit with him for 2 days, turned on a tape recorder, and I have those tapes. I've transcribed them, and they are a big part of the book I've written.
Oh, that is so fantastic. Is he still with us,
no,
this gentleman?
No, he died a year ago from Alzheimer's. I am so grateful that after 55 years or so, I was able to interview him, but I didn't have a lot of extra time. He, within a year or two of my interview, began to get dementia. After that, it was Alzheimer's, and then he died just a year ago this month.
I am so I'm so glad that you were able to spend that time with him
before he passed. Time grows short for that generation.
And we're losing about 1,100 of them every single day,
yes,
the World War II generation.
Right.
So I think it's important that all of us reach out to that generation and talk to them about their experiences. But for you, I mean, that was really an important thing for you to do for your film. Now, when you saw that entry in that flight log, how did those words affect you at the time?
I couldn't get through them. It had been a jovial 4th of July picnic up till that point. But after that, it became much more serious, obviously, and I couldn't get past the, when it read it was his last flight. I just couldn't get the words out. I tried several times. As I said, we have this on tape, and I just couldn't read it. It was just too emotional. It was too much of the past brought right to my face. My dear wife, Pauline, had to finish reading it for me and for the rest of us. There was not a sound to be heard as we read those words.
Well, Conrad, please stand by, because when we come back, I want you to finish this story if it has an ending, because it seems like this is the end of the story, but it's not, because something happens 8 years later, and we're going to talk about that when we come back.
Right.
More with Conrad Netting. His website is DelayedLegacy.com. You can go there and check out the story and the photographs for yourself. It's really stunning. I'm Monica Crowley on 77 WABC. We'll be right back.
Monica Crowley.
Is it written in the stars?
It's the last summer to see Aida on Broadway. The last summer to thrill to the songs of Elton John and Tim Rice, performed by platinum recording star Deborah A. Cox live at the Palace Theater. There's never been a better time to see Broadway's timeless love story. Great seats available now, so don't miss the phenomenal Deborah A. Cox in Aida, part of Disney on Broadway. Visit Ticketmaster.com today.
This summer, you can see Disney Channel star Christy Carlson Romano in Disney's Beauty and the Beast. You know her from TV's Even Stevens and Kim Possible, but now you can see her live on stage. Liz Smith raves, "I've seen Beauty and the Beast at least four times and I love it." But now with Christy Carlson Romano, the show is hotter than ever, which makes this summer the perfect time for your family to see Disney's Beauty and the Beast on Broadway. Visit Ticketmaster.com today.
Look who's shaking up delicatessen, Thumann's, the deli best. Today's society is health conscious. It's important to know that a company cares and maintains a tradition of high standards when it comes to making its products. Thumann's has been manufacturing the finest delicatessen items in the world for over 50 years. What does healthy mean to Thumann's? It means that Thumann's products are full muscle meats with the least amount of processing used in production. It means that we use only the leanest cuts of meat, the least amount of salt or sugar, no fillers, no extenders, no cereals, and absolutely no MSG. For the dieter, Thumann's products contain very low carbs. What does taste mean to Thumann's? It means that a sandwich made with Thumann's deli meats will simply be the best sandwich ever. Make sure you demand Thumann's, the deli best. Available at the finest deli counters.
Did you buy something that wasn't quite up to your expectations?
It really looks like a pinata got run over by a car.
Does somebody refuse to believe they actually made a mistake?
It's always about you, isn't it?
Got a problem with a product or service?
You lose!
And they won't even talk to you?
Good day, sir!
Before you call an expensive lawyer,
go where the action is!
Call for Action, Monday to Friday, from 10 a.m. to 1. Don't let them get away with it.
What do you take me for?
Call for Action.
Now I will make you bark like the dog you are.
212-268-5626. Helpful marriage tips from Ron Kuby.
The answer to the question, honey, do I look fat in these? In these pants? Do these shoes make me look fat? That answer is always no.
Really?
Not a bit. Not a bit. You look great. How do you like these shoes? The answer is, I love them.
Ron Kuby of Curtis and Kuby in the Morning.
Even if they...
I love those shoes. These are important lessons that
Ron,
people need
Ron,
to know.
Ron, you actually
boy, am I
of
dead.
Tremendous help.
I am so dead at home.
Curtis and Kuby in the Morning. Morning, 77 WABC.
Monica Crowley, News Talk Radio, 77 WABC.
Born in the USA, born in the USA now.
All right, happy Independence Day. It's the 4th of July weekend, and I'm glad you're with me here on 77 WABC. I'm Monica Crowley, and we continue now with Conrad Netting the 4th. That is a name and a half there, Conrad. Conrad Netting the 4th, he has this amazing story about his family, and there are July 4th aspects to it, which is why I wanted to have him on the show today. His website is www.delayedlegacy.com, and you can go up there and check out the whole story in its entirety, as well as the photographs that are really striking. Okay, Conrad, so where we left off before the break, we were talking about how you open this footlocker that had belonged to your father. You see his flight log. Tomahawk from World War II. Right. He died 6 days after D-Day, June 10th, 1944, taking out a German convoy. He died a hero. So you open up his flight log and you see in another person's handwriting, you see the final entry on the day he died, essentially saying how he had died and how he had died a hero. So these words affect you, and you sort of set it aside and you take it as a wonderful personal remembrance of the father you never knew. And you think that's the end of the story until about 8 years later. And something happened 8 years after that on a quiet Saturday in February of 2002. What was it?
Well, we were at home that day. It was quiet. The mail came, typical junk mail and catalogs. But underneath was an oversized packet, an envelope, big envelope from Paris. And I'm not used to receiving envelopes from Paris, so we tore into it rather quickly. And there was a gaggle of papers in there, maybe 10 or 15 of different documents. And on top was this letter, and it said, and I quote, "Dear Sir, my father is looking for more information about a brave soldier called Conrad J. Netting, killed in action during the war in Normandy and buried in France. We hope you are his son, his nephew, or close to him. You will find enclosed some documents and letters to show you the research my father has done on Mr. Netting. It is so important for my father, who a few months ago asked for a memorial to Mr. Netting be built in St. Michel, the place of his death."
So now when you see this, what are you thinking?
I thought it was a joke, to tell you the truth, at first, but very quickly we decided it wasn't, and we went on to the next document thinking, could this be really happening to us? This is a story that just when we thought it was over and had kind of said that was our family story, here comes a whole nother section to the story that we had never dreamed of.
Do you think it's fair to say, Conrad, that this story found you?
Oh, yes.
I mean, it just sort of dropped into your lap.
It's almost
right?
embarrassing how little spade work I did to start the project. All I did was open a footlocker and open the mail about 6 or 8 years apart, and everything else fell into place for us in God's own timing.
So now you get this package from France, and it has this letter in it, and they're in search of you.
Yes.
They're trying to find you, the son of Conrad Netting, your father, and this is a French family that's writing to you.
Yes.
And there was another letter here from her father,
yes,
Michel Grandin.
Yes.
What does that say?
It said, and I quote again, "Now this is written by a man who now is about almost 70 years old, and so he was a youngster at the time of World War II, probably 10 or 11 years old. So he is writing to the U.S. Army from France, trying to get more information about my father. So this is what he wrote. He says, my father, who was a cabinet maker, made the casket for this brave soldier's burial. I was a little boy, 11 years old. We are so grateful to this young man for fighting for a land that was not his own, and so sorry that he died far away from his homeland. I regularly visit the grave and lay flowers on it, paying tribute to this soldier fallen to liberate my country."
Now, that's a letter that this Frenchman wrote to the U.S. Army. Why did he write to the Army? Was he trying to find the family as well?
Yes. He was trying to find out how to contact my father's family, and he had gone to the American Military Cemetery in Brittany to find out my father's full name. And through that, he was able then to go through the U.S. Army personnel records in Virginia, write to them under the Freedom of Information Act, and get this information, which they subsequently provided to him.
All right. Now, Conrad, once you see this new material, it must have been just breathtaking for you.
I didn't get through this one either.
All right. Yeah, right. Well, it's another very emotional thing, because here's this French family saying, this Frenchman saying that his father had made the casket for your father and continually laid flowers on it and essentially watched over your father in France.
As the phrase put it in a subsequent letter, they took care of my
I want you
father.
To read that, because that's so important. Now, this is, okay, so you get this packet of material.
Yes.
You sit down at the internet. Now you've got the full access of the internet here to help you. And you find the granddaughter's name, or is this the
Sylvie.
Daughter?
No, his daughter's name was Sylvie. She's about 40, I would guess.
And you talk to her, and she sends you an email after that conversation.
Yes.
I want you to read that email because it's so moving.
It says, this is from this man's 40-year-old daughter, fluent in several languages, very intelligent and educated young lady in Normandy. And she said, quote, "My grandfather," that would be the cabinet maker, "my grandfather ran with some neighbors to the cemetery, the local cemetery, just by the place of the crash to help the pilot, but unfortunately it was too late. My grandfather made the casket and took care of your father. That evening, my father said, everything was ready for your father's funeral, and later on his grave was a mountain of flowers, unquote.
That is amazing.
Isn't
that
it?
It's amazing that this French family took it upon themselves to try to help your father. When
yes.
they got to the site of the crash, they realized
right.
it was too late, that he was already dead. They, as she says, they took care
right.
of your father. So they took care of his body, and then they
right.
took care of his memory, Conrad.
Yes, they continued. What we learned later was, through various emails, was that they that took care of meant they made the casket for his burial, in spite of German orders not to. Now, the Germans were very much still in evidence in Normandy, and were up until probably August. So there is no doubt that they were around, and they were not pleased at anybody taking any care of any Allied soldier's body. But they made the casket anyway. They organized a secret burial cortege that evening under cover of darkness to bury my father in the village cemetery. They blessed his body, said prayers of committal. It was a Christian service, which we had never known any of this before, and they buried him under cover of night.
Was he the only one of those pilots to die? Was
yes.
he the only American to die in that crash?
In that crash, yes.
Okay.
The others flew on back to the base and made their reports, which then eventually made their way back to my mother in San Antonio.
Now, I know, Conrad, that you then went to Normandy. You took a
yes.
trip to northern France. You met
yes.
with the French family who,
yes.
through generations, cared for your father's body and then later his memory. What was that like?
It was just a breathtaking. We went to dedicate this memorial that they had mentioned in the letter. The memorial turned out to be a plaque, a very lovely plaque, that they had wanted to place on the wall of the cemetery just by the place of my father's plane crash. So we went over there for that. They said, can you come over for this? And we said, well, of course. It turned out that it was the weekend of June the 6th, D-Day, 2 years ago that we went. So D-Day celebrations were happening all across Normandy. By the way, the Normans are a good deal different from most of the rest of the French.
Yeah, we're not a huge fan of the French on this program, but we refer to the French government and the French people who support the current French government. But you're talking about a different breed of French.
Totally different. We were so well received in Normandy. They have Allied flags across the roads, much like banners. They have American flags in the window. And as we went to this ceremony to dedicate this memorial, 140 people were there, including the congressman that came from Paris. We salute the American flag, which is flying higher than the French flags at the cemetery. I was stunned. And then my translator said, turn this way and face this way. And so I did. And then we heard the Star Spangled Banner played in the middle of Normandy.
Before the French national anthem, huh?
Only the Star Spangled
Only the
Star
Spangled
Banner. They never got around.
Well, first of all, that's remarkable for France. But that's an issue for another day.
Right.
But that must have been a very emotional thing to hear the Star Spangled Banner.
The whole crowd. I looked at the crowd, and there were Kleenex in every hand.
Well, then I know that you went to the Brittany American Cemetery and found your father's final resting place,
yes.
that white cross among 4,410 other white crosses and Stars of David.
That's right.
That must have been breathtaking.
It is. It's like an outdoor cathedral. You walk in, the crosses face away from you as you walk into this cemetery. I mentioned that to the caretaker as we made our way towards my father's site and said, I don't understand. Seems like they should be facing us as we come in. He said, no, two reasons. One is you're forced to accept the whole of the cemetery. You can't zero in on a name or a date or a state. Instead, you have to consider the whole. The second reason is, and this is much more important, that all crosses in American cemeteries faced west towards home.
Including your father's.
Including my father's.
What's the final chapter of this story?
I don't know if we've heard it yet, but if it has in fact unfolded in its entirety, I have written a book, and I'm looking for an agent to help me promote that will detail all of this and in all of its detail and all of the letters that I've written that I've read that my mother and father wrote to each other every day, two letters each day for probably 20 months. Unbelievable story.
Well, this story starts for you really on July 4th,
yes.
1994, 10
right.
years ago today. What does July 4th mean to you?
Well, it tells us that we have a lot to be thankful for. It's a remembrance, again, of what we are, how we got here, really. Every time we talk about the 4th of July, we talk about freedom. And I think that's the impact of what we have to consider. If we just accept this as another holiday, a good day to eat hot dogs, then...
Not 53 not hot 53. Dogs like the guy who won the right. Coney Island contest.
I might get one in today. But we do have to understand that that we can honor these men and the freedom they've given us by not forgetting. We cannot forget this. We cannot let it escape our memory or our children's or our grandchildren's. This has to continue. Otherwise, it's for naught if we don't remember what they did.
Absolutely, Conrad. And this is why I wanted to bring you on this program today, because I've heard it said that the true definition of humility is understanding that everybody has a story as great as yours and as important as yours. Right. And your story about your father, a man who you never knew, who died in World War II 6 days after the Normandy invasion. So many other people in America have similar story.
They
We're
do.
Highlighting yours today because the July 4th connection, and also because it's so moving. So many Americans have similar stories. And the reason I wanted to bring you on today was to remind everybody through you and your family story that Americans' freedom has been bought and paid for by men like your father, who
yes.
gave his life to keep us free.
Thousands of men, 407,000 is the estimate, that were killed during World War II. We were at the World War II Memorial Dedication in Washington a month ago, or a little over, and there were still literally thousands of veterans that showed up in wheelchairs with oxygen bottles on walkers. They were not to be denied this moment for their for the remembrance of what they did.
What they did 60 years ago, incredibly right. important. They single-handedly saved the world.
But there's so many stories, and probably a story not much mentioned is that there were, as the VA estimates, 183,000 children left fatherless by World War II, and I am but one of those.
You're but one of them, and your father died a hero like so many others,
yes.
and we thank you for sharing your story today,
Thank you
Conrad.
For your time.
It was very nice to have you here. Conrad Netting, last name N-E-T-T-I-N-G. You can go to his website, www.delayedlegacy.com, and you can see all the fabulous pictures of his very handsome father, a man he never knew because he gave his life to keep us free. So go check it out. You won't be sorry. 1-800-848-WABC. What does July 4th mean to you on this Independence Day? I'm Monica Crowley on 77 WABC. We'll be right back.
Monica Crowley, WABC.
Hey,